welcome students from Brookfield Central. Would they please stand? Thank you for coming. You may be seated. Students are here with a national award-winning program cleverly entitled Court with Class, that is sponsored by the State Bar of Wisconsin and the Supreme Court. We invite students to come to the court to listen to oral argument. They may engage in activities related to the case we're about to hear. And then at noon, if they can stay, and I gather this group cannot stay, they meet with a justice assigned to meet with the class to discuss the procedures of the court, not the substantive issues. So I'm sorry we won't have an opportunity to do that with you all. If anyone in the courtroom would like a copy of a summary of the case we're about to hear, if you would raise your hand, we'd give you a summary. Now I'll go on to introduce the court to you all. Beginning on my far right is Justice Annette Ziegler. Seated next to her is Justice David Prosser. To my immediate right is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. Immediately to my left is Justice Patrick Crooks. And to Justice Crooks's left is Justice Patience Rogensack, and on the far left is Justice Michael Gableman. Having introduced the court, I can go on to call our second case for the day, 12AP5 CED Properties LLC versus the City of Oshkosh. Arguing on behalf of CED Properties is Eric S. Olson of Eminent Domain Services, LLC. Thank you, Mr. Olson. You may proceed.
May it please the court, it's a great privilege to be here, and this is a case that looks at the rules of civil procedure in Wisconsin, most specifically notice pleading and relation back, in the context of judicial assessment. CED Properties, LLC, owns property in the city of Oshkosh at the corner of Jackson Street and Murdoch Avenue. The city, on July 27th of 2010, passed a final resolution creating a special assessment, a tax, against CED's property. CED objected and filed a notice with the city and a complaint in circuit court. CED's complaint stated, on July 27, 2010, Oshkosh, by its common council, authorized the issuance of a $19,241.73 special assessment on parcel number 15-1898-1000 to help pay for the street repair portion of the Jackson Street-Murdoch Avenue intersection improvement project. Now, our statutes state at 801.01 sub 2 that the rules of civil procedure in Wisconsin shall be construed to secure the just, speedy, and inexpensive determination of every action and proceeding. Simply put, what these rules mean is that they intend to create a common sense and practical way for people to resolve the arguments or controversies that they have in the state of Wisconsin, and for the courts to be a forum for the just or fair, inexpensive and speedy determination of what litigants' rights are in each case and controversy. And of course, one of the core pieces of our system of jurisprudence is the pleadings, the answer, the complaint, and the other pleadings which may occur throughout the course of a lawsuit, such as amended pleadings, cross-claims, counterclaims. These are a centerpiece of our system of civil procedure. And it's a system of civil procedure that's evolved over time. we've come to where we are not out of a sudden inspiration, but through a course of history over which we've learned perhaps from our past mistakes, and at each juncture tried to make the system a little bit better, to provide justice to litigants, to provide, also a system that can be administered, that a system that's fair, and a system that hopefully gives people their opportunity to have their complaint heard and some sort of relief granted if they are due it.
Now, does notice pleading counsel, though, go to the issue of if you plead a claim, it should be construed liberally based on the statutory notice pleading. But
yes.
But isn't the question here whether or not you pled a claim? You pled a claim for one assessment, or whether a claim is pled, shall I say. A claim was clearly pled for one assessment. Isn't the issue whether or not a claim was pled for another assessment?
Well, I think 802.02 sub 1A, which is the statute on contents of pleadings, says that the pleading has to identify the transaction or occurrence or series of transactions or occurrences out of which the claim arises. What that means is that the language that the complaint utilizes needs to identify the thing that the pleader is complaining about. So in any given situation, there might be quite a number of different ways that the person could adequately describe what they were complaining about. They could say any number of things. And so I think notice pleading, what it comes down to is, did the language that we used in our complaint at the notice pleading level, did it adequately describe, did it adequately draw a circle around that thing out there in the world that we wanted to put the city on notice that we were complaining about? Or did we draw too small a circle? Did we only draw a circle around the little miniature part of the special assessment that they claim exists?
Counsel, the statute doesn't say anything about that thing out there in the world. The statute 802.02.1a that you speak of says a short and plain statement of the claim.
Well, and it goes on to qualify, Your Honor, with identifying the transaction or occurrence or series of transactions or occurrences out of which the claim arises.
Yes, but the preface is you have to have a claim. And then what do you do with that claim? You have to, with that claim, identify the transaction or occurrence or series of transactions or occurrences out of which the claim arises. So give me your best argument as to where I find or how I find the claim asserted for the other property or for the other person.
The claim, quite simply, is that the special assessment levied against us is void because it's unconstitutional, not local in nature, and each of the preceding reasons. So, and therefore, it should be void. So if we're making a claim, it's that the special assessment is void for the reasons further stated in our complaint, which we enumerated. And that, I think, was never very much of an issue. And, in fact, the city ended up acquiescing to the fact that the special assessment was void. It was just the only question was whether paragraph 4 of our complaint had adequately drawn a circle around a big enough portion of the special assessment or just a little one.
Fair enough. So let's take a look at paragraph 4. Where in paragraph 4 is there a claim set forth for this other assessment?
Well, Your Honor, I think that what it comes down to is we use language in a context. We use language in a society. And it's possible, and sometimes I believe that law is reduced to sort of word games or logic games, and we can play with grammar and different things like this. And then there's just the common sense reality that people say things like, those books, do I mean all five or do I mean the one that's laying down too? You know? And then the question is, was the language that was chosen in the complaint good enough in a fair sense to put the other party on notice as to what we were complaining about, given a generous reading.
And let's go through the language. I'm going to go up to three.
Okay.
The parcel number is 15-1898-1000. Is that the only parcel number that the plaintiff has in this area?
Yes.
That's it?
Yes.
Okay. And that's the same thing in your amended complaint?
Yes.
All right. Four. On July 27, Oshkosh, by its common council, authorized the issuance of a $19,241.73 special assessment on parcel 15-1898-1000 to help pay for the street repair portion of Jackson Street, Murdoch Avenue intersection.
Yes, sir.
All right. How many resolutions did the Oshkosh Common Council pass relating to this?
One final resolution.
Okay, one final resolution. And it covered both the Jackson Street, this is a corner lot, obviously, and Murdoch, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. But what's the matter with this? What's the matter with it is it's the number is wrong. 19,000 is wrong.
The
right?
Number?
38,000.
It may be 38 or more. We're not sure.
Or a little more, right?
Possibly, yeah.
All right. But otherwise, you got the parcel number. You got special assessment, right? You got street repair portion. Is that correct?
True.
Is that good enough?
It is, Your Honor.
And you got both Jackson Street and Murdoch Avenue, right?
True.
Okay. But the only little problem you got there is you're short by about half.
We have too low a dollar amount in there, Your Honor, by the city's argument.
Is there a requirement that you have a dollar amount in your complaint?
No.
So I'm going to your first amended complaint. And on 4, it reads exactly the same, except now you have assessment with a paren as paren, right? And instead of street repair portion, you have pay for a construction project. Mm-hmm. That would be performed on and in the vicinity of, so now you're adding a little language, for Jackson Street, Murdoch Avenue intersection, right? You have intersection, et cetera, and you left out the amount of money.
True.
You need the amount of money.
Well, we didn't need the amount of money, and I think that the reality is that the initial complaint was sufficient under the notice pleading standard, which is plainly proven by the fact that the dissent in the Court of Appeals opinion seemed to have no trouble reading paragraph 4 to draw a circle around the whole special assessment. And in fact, the city's answer, their answer to our initial complaint, had no trouble whatsoever understanding paragraph 4 of our complaint to draw a circle around the entire special assessment.
How about, they say, admit only that on July 27, the city adopted a final resolution authorizing an assessment against that parcel number and other benefited properties for public improvements listed in the resolution, and then it denied everything else. So it denied your $19,000, the way I read their answer.
True, Your Honor, but later their story was that there really was a little special assessment for $19,241.73, and you only appealed that one. So if that was really their story all along, then their answer for should have admitted. It should have admitted there was this little one, and then they should have later on said, you didn't appeal any of the other ones. We very narrowly construed what you said to be only directed at the portion of the special assessment or the side special assessment for $19,241.73, and we never knew that you were complaining about any other part of the special assessment. But their answer to the initial complaint makes it very clear that they understood what we understood, which was that we were complaining about the entire special assessment against this parcel levied on the date we specified, at the intersection we specified, for the improvement project we specified, but for the entire amount, whatever that amount might end up being. And
Council?
Yes.
I'm trying to figure out what your job is and what the city's job is and why it makes sense to have you have those respective roles when it comes to an assessment and the city being able to go forward on that or not go forward on that. Part of the 90-day limit is because within a finite period of time, the city needs to know, am I going to be challenged on this or can the project go forward, right? And the city has certain obligations and responsibilities to do it right so that you know what it is that you would need to contest, right? Now, the city agrees that they didn't exactly do this right. Is that correct?
True.
Okay. But when I'm looking at your job and your duties under the statute, is it your duty to file a complaint within 90 days, or is it your duty to file a notice of appeal within 90 days?
Well, it's to file a notice of appeal, which we
filed.
And
what does your notice of appeal say? Is that limited to the $19,000 figure?
Well, it points to the complaint. The notice of appeal simply points to the complaint. But the complaint doesn't limit itself to the $19,000 figure. The complaint sets forth what we...
I understand that, but your notice of appeal doesn't limit that either. It appeals a special assessment. It says it's further described in the complaint. But it doesn't have that $19,000 figure in it, right?
Correct.
Well, in effect, your notice of appeal cooperates as if it's fully stated right in your notice of appeal.
But if you would have filed this notice of appeal without the reference to the complaint,
mm-hmm.
do you think the city would have an argument here? I mean,
well,
my question to you is, your argument regarding notice pleading and relation back and the application of the civil procedure statutes is you're making that because you happen to file these two things at the same time in this case, right? But had you filed your notice of appeal and then later filed your complaint, would you need to make the argument that you're making? If you just filed in your notice of appeal, we're appealing our special assessment for parcel number 00-whatever?
Well, we don't have the parcel number in the notice of appeal, and we served the, as it happened, the notice of appeal was served on them along with a copy of the complaint attached to it.
I understand that. You're not tracking with me.
I'm sorry. Well, they could
have. Did you have to do it that way? Because to me, you're making a broader argument than you need to be making. It troubles me. I got to tell you, it troubles me. 90 days is a period of time where you have to do certain things. And it isn't that it's just, oh, gosh, you can always amend things and it can always continue on and civil procedure just goes on and on and on in this kind of a case. There are some parameters to it. But there also, is there the requirement that you do it the way you did it in this case? You could have filed your notice of appeal and then later filed your complaint, right?
Well, if the notice of appeal is sufficient, if it's sufficient to just give them a notice of appeal saying we're appealing the special assessment, and they know what the special assessment is, and they don't make an argument that, oh, it's vague as to which special assessment you are appealing, then we're done because we filed our notice of appeal, and then we filed the complaint, and in reality, they probably knew what we were appealing because we had been there speaking at this. You know, the point is that I think that the pleadings and everything else point to the fact that it was a later theory that the city came up with that, in fact, they could avoid part of our challenge by kind of narrowly arguing for a narrow construction of the complaint. A construction that...
What role does the resolution play in your argument?
The resolution in our argument?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact of the matter is that the resolution was... The resolution quite clearly merged all of the special assessments into one special assessment. The resolution bore one date. It was one resolution for various, you know, pieces of work that were going to be done. That was discussed on one date, and at Section 5 it says, the assessments for all projects in said report are hereby combined as a single special assessment, but any interested property owners shall be entitled to object to each assessment separately or both assessments jointly for any purpose or purposes. So one way of reading our complaint is that we pointed it at the Jackson Street Murdoch Avenue intersection project. That's one reading, and that we got the dollar amount wrong. Another way of looking at it is, another reading is that we actually only appealed one side of it, that we took the right that was created by paragraph 5 of the final resolution and objected only to each assessment separately instead of objecting to both assessments jointly. I think if complaints are to be liberally construed, if we're going to give common everyday people their crack at having their complaints heard, then if we're to just simply follow the case law that this court has created again and again and construe complaints liberally in favor of the drafter, then we take the second construction, the construction that the very able dissent at the Court of Appeals adopted. Not to say that the other construction isn't a possible construction, just if we're liberally construing it, then we do it that way.
Are you arguing at all that the assessments are basically void because they didn't file the report required?
Well, they've admitted that the assessments are void. The city has admitted that the assessments are void.
Not the one you appealed, but the other one they won on, right?
No, they've admitted that it's all void. They admitted that the condition precedent, which was that they file the required report.
That's true, why are you here? If you won both ways, why are you here?
Well, because they said that it was void, but we were precluded from challenging it because our complaint...
I understand, but my question of you, we're not tracking again. Okay. If it's void from its inception because they didn't do it right, they couldn't have assessed you that amount from the beginning, and therefore there was nothing for you to appeal because you couldn't have been assessed it.
Well,
that's my question. Are you arguing that?
I am arguing that. I think that that's true, but I think that the case law points to the idea that a court may never be able to reach that because the court may lose subject matter jurisdiction if a sufficient appeal isn't timely filed. So even though it would be void, and even though perhaps a court sitting in equity could say we decline to enforce a void tax as a sort of a legal matter, the litigant would be precluded from ever bringing it to the ears of the court, so to speak, because the time limit of 90 days had passed.
Counsel, don't they just get a do-over? I mean, they didn't file the report that was appropriate in a timely fashion, but doesn't the municipality just get to file what is appropriate, and couldn't they assess the same special assessments again, end up in the same place?
Well, and I anticipate that they probably will, and that's the first page of our reply brief says, likely, after this case is decided, the city will reassess attempt to reassess either the 19,000, you know, either the whole thing or part of it, and then we will finally get to the actual merits of the case on the constitutional issue, on the various other issues that we raised in our complaint. So, in a sense, this case is a precursor to deciding the meat of the matter, which will presumably be decided when they attempt to reassess either half of it or all of it. And I think that as a matter of fairness, as a matter of simply following the case law of this court, we should be able to challenge all of it. Perhaps most convincingly, if we look at the case of the Tews case, which the citation for that is uh, 2010 Wisconsin 137 is the public domain citation, and then we look at paragraph 2. The question is, has the opposing party received fair notice of the claim? They did. They said so in their answer. And then if we look further on in Tews to paragraph 81, Tews said, we emphasize that our determination here is not based on any reliance on the allegations in Tews complaint. Rather, it's based on the admitted and indisputed facts established by the defendant's responsive pleadings, the answer. Lastly, Ed, because my yellow light has come on here, I would just like to draw the court's attention to the fact that the majority opinion in the Court of Appeals said an interesting thing. It said even the most generous reading of CED's complaint couldn't draw a circle, in essence, around the whole special assessment. But you don't have to look any further than the dissent to find a reading that does just that. And the case law that the majority cites to, Hertling versus Hutchhausen, which I have trouble pronouncing that, was a case where one of the litigants, instead of pleading the affirmative defense of accord and satisfaction, set out in the affirmative defense section that we paid, or actually I believe the, instead of saying accord and satisfaction, the litigant said that they have paid the contract price in full. And that's at page 7 in Hertling versus Hutchhausen, which is the case that the Apple Hill Farms development case, which the majority cites to, relies on. And then what the court goes on to say in Hertling versus Hutchhausen is the statement I just read, is an ample statement of the defense. So if we had an ample statement of the defense that the dissent at the Court of Appeals understood to draw a circle around the whole special assessment, and if the city, in its answer, understood our complaint to be drawing a circle around the whole special assessment, then the entire body of law on notice pleading supports the idea that we should be able to challenge the whole thing. Even if it somehow fails, it has never been alleged that we weren't trying to challenge the whole special assessment. And then relation back applies because it says set forth or attempted to be set forth. We were trying to set it forth. No one has ever negatived that assertion. No one has ever been, that assertion has never been challenged this entire time, that CED was trying to challenge the whole special assessment, and that is the exact thing that issue or claim relation back applies to. And quite frankly, if the city had any prejudice at all from the few-month period where maybe they didn't know the full scope of the dollars of the special assessment that we were trying to challenge, they have never alleged any prejudice. They have never alleged any actual confusion. All they've alleged is a technical error in our pleading, namely the inclusion of 19,000 and change instead of 38,000 and change, which they seem to acquiesce that if we could just...
Counsel, when you look at the statute, 66.0703, mm-hmm. and we're working under 12, right? Sub 12. Is that correct?
I believe so, Your Honor.
It really doesn't tell you what to do. It says that if you have an interest and you want to object to what the governing body is doing, you can serve a written notice of appeal on the clerk. And the clerk then has some functions of getting the statement of the proceedings together. And then it says under B, the appeals should be tried and determined in the same manner as cases originally commenced in circuit court and costs awarded as provided in 89380. But that doesn't tell you, if you're going to commence it in circuit court, you've got to have a subpoena, right?
Summons.
And a complaint. Summons, okay, sorry. Summons and a complaint. Here, there's nothing about a summons. It's just a matter of serving, right? A written notice of appeal on the clerk. It doesn't say anything about a complaint. It says only a notice of appeal. But if you look further on, under E, this is your sole remedy. And you're supposed to raise any question of law or fact stated in the notice of appeal. So, obviously, this notice of appeal has to be more than we're appealing. It has to have statements of law and of fact to give notice. And what you did is you had a notice of appeal and attached a complaint. So it looks like a circuit court proceeding, in effect. And there's an answer. So this is my lead up to the question, which is, and I haven't looked at it, but do the form books in Wisconsin have forms that help you in how you should act under 66.0703? Do they tell you to do a notice of appeal with a complaint or a notice of an appeal concluding a complaint?
Well, Your Honor, my right.
Practice law, I always went to a form book. I shouldn't say always. I often went to a form book to see how it's done. If I couldn't find it in a form book, I would have gone to the clerk of court's office in Madison or to a clerk that did special assessments and said, oh, can you give me several files how you do this so I can learn how to do it? And then I would have made copies of it and then got my own form file together.
Chief Justice, my red light is on. May I reply to your question?
It is required to reply.
Okay. I'm not aware of any forms in a form book that say how to do a special assessment appeal. I won't stand before you here and say I combed through every single one. But what's interesting about what you just brought up, Your Honor, is that my thoughts in reading about our rules of civil procedure is that the exact scenario that you have just described largely explains why our pleadings in this state are the way that they are. People go and find pleadings that previous attorneys in their firm, I was in a very small firm at that time, so we didn't have a lot of pleadings, and then they copy those. We look at pleadings of opposing counsel, and we end up with a mishmash of language borrowed from special pleading, language and ideas borrowed from code pleading, language and ideas that were extracted from other jurisdictions and under the federal rules of civil procedure, and then we're left to puzzle through what is really sufficient under Wisconsin's rules of civil procedure. And in reading and in studying in order to come here and make this argument and to write these briefs for this court, I had a great opportunity to learn a lot about that, and I actually learned that much of what I've been doing for the past 9 years is probably superfluous and at the very least not exactly what is anticipated or sort of the design of our Wisconsin rules of civil procedure, which is a short, plain, common sense statement that puts the other side on notice. And if they understood it, and if it seems that there's been no prejudice, then that is probably good enough, because the idea is a court system where it's not arcane and it's not shielded from any understanding by everyday people, but rather a court system where people, if they do their best and fairly put the other side on notice and follow the rules, should have their disputes aired.
So, is this the way you do it out in the city of Oshkosh or not? I mean, there must have been other assessments, special assessments. Did other people appeal?
Well, I know of at least one or two other ones having been involved in them, but they weren't coroners. Mm-hmm. So it didn't become an issue.
No, but did they file a notice of appeal and a complaint, or did they file
notice
of appeal?
Is that in this record?
Your Honor, I don't believe it's in the record, so I probably... I mean, I can answer if I'm instructed to, but I don't think we have any of that information in the record.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Richard J. Carlson, City of Oshkosh.
May it please the Court, Richard Carlson, Appleton, representing the respondent, City of Oshkosh. I'd like to begin by saying this is not a case about notice pleading. It has nothing to do with notice pleading. How you do an appeal is governed by statute 66.0703.
What happens when your report doesn't comply with sub 5?
Pardon me?
What happens now that the city didn't follow sub 5?
The assessment is technically invalid. It cannot go ahead for this, or it would not go ahead for this particular property had the appeal been timely. The court.
For all the people who didn't appeal, it would go forward? Or is it that you have to start over for everyone? If you
starting over is a remedy. The sanction, the court, this statute has been around since 1949, and the courts have been very consistent over that 64-year period that if you don't strictly comply with the procedures for levying a special assessment, it is invalid. And likewise, for a property owner, if you don't strictly comply with the appeal requirements and the timeliness requirements of that statute, you forfeit an appeal.
What's the appeal requirement?
If it's invalid from the beginning, what is there to appeal?
Well, there's a number of cases over a long period of time that say if you do not comply with the appeal requirements, you forfeit your right to appeal even if the assessment is invalid for not following statutory procedures, even if the assessment is invalid for assessing something that can't be assessed, that they don't have legislative authority to do it.
Well,
it's basically you forfeit your right to appeal an invalid
What's the purpose behind Sub 5? Isn't that to let people know, here's what's happening, here's what we're assessing, and here's why, so that you can challenge it if you need to? I mean, what's the purpose your requirement to follow Sub 5?
Sub 5, the guts of Sub 5, just like the guts of any special assessment, is the schedule of assessments, and that is a requirement in Sub 5. Sub 5 also has a requirement that there has to be a statement that the property being assessed is benefited. That's all that's required, that single statement, those words. And in this case, the city of Oshkosh did not have those words. Another thing that Sub 5 requires is the total cost of the project. The city of Oshkosh in this assessment did not state the total cost of the project. That's understandable because the total cost of the project was about $4 million. The city's share was $1.4 million. DOT was going to pick up the rest. And the city assessed approximately $300,000 of their $1.4 million share of this project. In total, the city assessed approximately 7.5% of the total project cost.
But my question
that
is,
should, and I agree that Sub 5 would require, as it says specifically, that the total cost of the project should be disclosed. It should be part of the resolution, and it was not.
What's the purpose of Sub 5? Why does the city have to give that information? What's the purpose?
I think it would be to inform the property owners about the nature of the project.
Okay.
That, I think, is the purpose of Sub 5. This is what the city is going to do. This is going to affect your property.
And give them
we want you to be informed of that. Typically, then the schedule of assessments would specify a specific proposed amount to be assessed for a particular property.
Where do you get all that from? Sub 6?
Pardon me?
How do you answer that question? You get it from Sub 6, which explains why the company report shall be filed and what they do with it? Is that your point?
Yes.
Okay.
But I want to get back to the notice of
appeal. I would like to do that, too. So you said that 766.07032 deals with the appeal, right?
Correct.
And that they got to comply with it. And I agree. But what are the conditions for compliance? That I don't see. Other than you have to have 90 days after the date, and you got the person appealing serves a written notice of appeal on the clerk, right?
Right.
Puts up a bond, all right? And then the clerk has an obligation under 12A. But it doesn't say what the notice of appeal has to consist of.
Yes, it does.
Where?
In E.
All right, let's look at E.
This is what governs what has to be part of a notice of appeal.
Okay.
The notice of appeal shall raise any question of law or fact.
I read that before to your opponent. Okay. All right. The notice of appeal
is
to raise any question of law or fact. Does it have to do it in the appeal? Can it have an attachment that does it?
Let me back up a little bit about how that goes. It used to be, in the old days, one would file a notice of appeal to the clerk, and that notice of appeal would raise any question of law or fact about the project, about the assessment, and that would be filed with the clerk. That would be served on the clerk. And then what one did usually took what you had done for the appeal, and you would put that in a complaint, and you would file the complaint in circuit court within 90 days.
Wait a minute. As part of the notice or not? But it had to be done in the
90
days.
No, it was basically the notice was a separate document.
Okay.
And then you would transform the information that you had on that notice of appeal or on that appeal, and you would put it in your complaint, and you had to file your complaint.
It all had to be done in 90 days.
Correct.
Okay. So
and then the MIA.
Answering my question about what is the practice in Oshkosh.
What is the practice in Oshkosh?
You're just telling us. The old days, you filed a notice.
No, I'm not talking about the practice in Oshkosh. I'm talking about the practice of filing an appeal and a claim for assessments generally, not in Oshkosh. I'm just talking about municipal law, how you would do that.
That's
representing
right.
A property
okay.
owner. You would file a notice of appeal. And it would raise every question of law and fact, and that would be served on the clerk. And then what you would do is you would take that information that you had in the notice of appeal, you would draft a complaint, and you would file the complaint in circuit court within 90 days of the final resolution.
Two documents.
And then MIAC versus Cloverleaf, Lakes Sanitary District Number 1, came along. And what that case, this was a court of appeals case, and what that case said is basically you could combine a notice of appeal with a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
You could shortcut.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't have to file a notice of appeal that was separate. You didn't have to file some additional paper to the clerk. What you could do is you could just do a complaint, and then you could just say, this is also my notice of appeal, and then you would serve it on the clerk. So no notice of appeal, per se, was served on the clerk. What was served on the clerk was a complaint that said it was also a notice of appeal. That's exactly what CED did here. And what they did was they did a shortcut, and maybe they're regretting having to do the shortcut. But nevertheless, if you do the shortcut, you still must comply with the appeal requirements of 660703-12E, and that is raise any question of law or fact. And it is our position that the city of Oshkosh has a policy of doing separate assessments for corner lots, one for each street frontage. This is not an unusual municipal practice. This is a very common practice. There are advantages to that. There are actually advantages of clarity to that for a property owner.
If there were no dollar amount listed in the complaint that was filed, everything was the same, but there was no dollar amount listed, would we be here today?
Would be close. I don't think it would still pass.
No. Why?
It's not specific enough. It wouldn't have every fact. Wouldn't raise every fact.
What are the facts that it wouldn't raise?
Number one, that there were two assessments.
Well, that's an interpretation of what the council did, and I understand your reason for saying that. Okay.
I
would see it as one assessment that happens to have two components. So what aside from that?
I don't think it's an interpretation. The assessments, the number of assessments, are shown in the schedule of assessments. You can't spin that any other way but to say that there were two assessments.
I'm not interested in spinning it. I'm interested in whether facts. So I understand your statement now that there were two assessments, not one, and they had to complain about both.
But if there were no dollar amount, why would you think that objecting to the special assessment of the intersection of these two roads would focus only on one assessment?
I can speculate on a broad-based complaint. You're not necessarily objecting so much to the project. You are objecting to the improvements that are made. Your complaint should refer to all the improvements.
Well, they say it's not a local, you know, it has to be a local improvement in order to special assess, and that's what the complaint says. It's not local.
We're talking about paragraph 4. I mean, that's an argument. That's an argument about whether it's local or not. I mean, that's okay.
I'm just trying to figure out what legal issues and what facts you think are missing. I understand you think the dollar amount actually is missing.
The local thing, whether it's local or not, is a legal conclusion.
Okay, well, that's a legal issue that he should raise, though, correct?
As a question of law, yes.
But, counsel, following up on that, doesn't it seem that that's what CED wants the opportunity to challenge in regard to both assessments?
I believe that CED, for a reason that escapes me, overlooked the schedule of assessments and overlooked the fact that there was an assessment for Jackson Street.
Perhaps.
I cannot explain how that is because
Perhaps the answer, counsel, lies within the question you posed in regard, it escapes me, how they could have overlooked. The city has made mistakes. It seems to me CED has made mistakes. They're looking for the opportunity. They, as you point out in page 13 of your brief, they attempted to rectify the mistake by filing an amended complaint, deleting any reference to the amount of the assessment, and adding an S in parentheses, obviously, to indicate plural assessments. And then your stemwinder on that page on the bottom is, however, CED never deleted the assessment amount in the original complaint. In short, CED thought it could hide its mistake through obfuscation. And I'm not quite sure how we get to obfuscation as opposed to either clerical error or Scrivener's error, the attorney's error, whatever, of not adding that. What is the city's big concern here? Is there going to be some, if we grant the relief they're seeking, which is their day in court to challenge us, or is the city concerned that we're going to be opening the floodgates of litigation for people who own properties on intersections in the city of Oshkosh and who get two assessments? Is that what you're worried about?
I can't tell you what the city of Oshkosh is worried
about. You represent
about.
The city of Oshkosh,
right.
I thought.
Whether they...
You represent the city of Oshkosh.
Correct. But an assessment is a legislative decision. A reassessment is a legislative decision. I would be concerned if I was the city of Oshkosh that there would be other challenges to the assessment.
So the answer to my question is yes.
Yes, and I would be upset by the city of Oshkosh if I knew I had to litigate this thing further on the merits if we did reassess it, because all that's going to cost money.
And so because errors were made, they shouldn't be allowed to litigate because they didn't include the 38,000 number. They tried.
There is no assessment for 38,000. There's a couple of things you raised here. First of all, our technical defects had nothing whatsoever to do with the fact that the city levied two assessments.
I'm not quite sure you'd look at it that way if you're the one personally who had to pay the bill, counsel.
Well, let me tell you what the trial court said.
I'm aware.
CED admitted to the trial court that it only appealed an assessment for $19,241. It said, we were under the impression, this is before the trial court, and this is, I'm reading from the trial transcript verbatim.
I understand.
We were under the impression that it was a total of $19,241.73. The trial court stated, let's assume. Well, we don't need to assume. You were incorrect on that. The trial court later said, the complaint was absolutely directed towards the one assessment. This are conclusions of the trial court. The Court of Appeals also said there was only one assessment. There was never any assessment for $38,000 and change.
Right.
Never.
There were only two assessments that in their totality equaled $38,000.
Correct.
Thank you.
No, each side has made an error, but my understanding is correct. The city of Oshkosh loses out on the $19,241.73 assessment, but all they do is then send out a proper notice and do the assessment again. So they get a do-over on their error. Why shouldn't the property owner get a do-over on his error?
Because long-establishing law, and I'm going back 65 years, the courts have been consistent. It's not just one or two cases. There are half a dozen cases that say if you don't comply, you forfeit your right to appeal.
But the city doesn't forfeit their right to tax.
Correct.
Correct?
Correct.
And so don't we look at what it was that caused the mischief here? And as I look at the complaint, the only thing I see that's causing any mischief is the dollar amount. And if you just left it out, I don't think we'd be here.
I don't agree that if you just left out the amount.
Well, the second thing.
Here's my response to that. I don't agree if we just left out the amount, we wouldn't be here. I would agree that if he left out the amount and he did a better job on the background facts, without the amounts, it could possibly pass legal muster. That is, it could raise questions of law or fact. But I think if you just knocked out the amount on this complaint, it would not pass legal muster.
So in your view, the amended complaint wasn't good enough?
Correct.
Counsel, what would happen if every taxpayer assessed would have filed a notice of appeal of the assessment?
A formal notice without, okay, in other words, filed it with the clerk.
Right.
Didn't
the city concede that the city blew it and didn't give the proper notice under sub 5, and so therefore the taxpayer won? Wouldn't the taxpayers comply with sub 5?
I'm not following the question. And what would happen is if every property owner would appeal, it would mean that probably the city of Oshkosh or any other municipality made an improvement that maybe wasn't that politically wise.
No.
Part
of what I'm hearing you say is, wasn't summary judgment granted in their favor on the one parcel that you say was properly appealed, right?
No. Summary judgment was granted. Correct. On the one with the 19,241.
Why was summary judgment granted on that one parcel?
Because I said that the defect of the city in not putting a statement that the property was benefited by case law says that that assessment is invalid. Right.
Now, with respect to, and there I go back to my question, if every single property owner, taxpayer, person assessed would have filed that same notice of appeal, you would have made the same concession, presumably.
Correct.
Right?
And we would have redone the assessment.
Okay. So the note to the taxpayer is file a notice of appeal in case the city makes a mistake. Because
correct.
Otherwise
exactly.
the
exactly.
city can make a mistake and the taxpayer
And that has been exactly the posture of the law for the last 64 years.
But if the taxpayer files a defective notice,
he forfeits his right to appeal.
That's right. That's
and if the city does a defective assessment, the city has a do-over.
Right.
And that has been established law for 64 years. And it's not just one or two cases. It's not just dicta. It is the heart of how the court has interpreted special assessments since 1949.
The reason is because the general rule of law is you obey the law, whether it is valid or invalid.
Correct.
And if you disobey the law, you pay the consequences. If the law is invalid when it's disobeyed, then the state may have a little trouble. But you cannot just sit there and wait. If you have to put out a notice of appeal, you have to do it. Just can't sit there and then say, I'm not paying the assessment.
I think you guys just decided a case not too long ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, involving assessment of a condominium, Green Lake.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the caption on that. There's like, I don't know, there's probably 30 units in that condominium. Look on the caption. You'll see 30 claimants. If you don't file an appeal or file it correctly, you're done. You forfeit. And if you look at that Green Lake thing, I can't remember what the cap, you know, but all those unit owners were part of the appeal, were named in the appeal, did an appeal.
Counsel,
if you don't do an appeal, you don't get the first base. And I think by this notice pleading stuff, what they're trying to do is they're trying to get to second base without even first going to first base. You've got to do the appeal requirements of the statute.
I don't know if I agree with you that the original notice of appeal with the complaint attached was not an adequate statement of the law and the facts. They gave the assessment, the parcel number. They referred to the special assessment on a date. They referred to the special assessment by the two street names. They erred.
Refers to the project by the two street names.
Okay, that's fine. That's what they did. So it's there. Somewhere it's there. They have a misstatement of the amount of money. So you have an ambiguity here. Are they referring to only one part of the project for $19,000? Or is that an error and they're really referring to the project that covers both streets?
I believe that they basically admitted to the trial court that they made a mistake. They only appealed one assessment.
Okay.
I think this idea about they just stated the wrong amount, first of all, the trial court didn't agree with that.
That's a finding of fact by the trial court.
Yeah, the Court of Appeals said there's nothing in the record to suggest that there was any $38,000 assessment and rejected that argument as well.
Wasn't there a footnote, and I don't recall precisely, in the dissent indicating that the realization that there was a second assessment with an additional $19,000 didn't happen until discovery in this case after the complaint? I might be wrong. Does that track?
I think it was a long time. I believe this isn't in the record, but I believe
we tried
mediating it ourselves. We tried mediating this issue by ourselves at City Hall, and that's when I believe CED first realized that, oops, we only did one assessment, and there were two.
So what I'm hearing you say is the city can do virtually everything wrong with respect to assessing a taxpayer, but if the taxpayer doesn't appeal, the taxpayer loses.
The city can do everything wrong, yes, but the city, if it does anything or everything wrong, has to do it over again.
But if the taxpayer doesn't
appeal. The taxpayer does not do a correct appeal, they forfeit. Even if the city does it wrong. Yes. And there are, like I said, this is not just in one case, this is a consistent application of the law over the last 60 years.
Counsel, Justice.
Go ahead.
Recently, I think in the MJ case.
I was just going to ask you, because in your brief, when you say we would be if we found for your opposing counsel, we would be upsetting a break from a long-established precedent. And the precedent I hear you voice here in oral argument is there are many cases, you say, even if the city makes a mistake, that the property owner still has to comply.
Correct.
But I don't see all of those cited in your brief. Maybe I'm missing some of that? I mean, you suggest there were, I think what, one time you said there are five or six, and another time you said it's been almost, you know.
Well, because that wasn't really an issue in the case. The law is pretty well settled on here.
Okay.
I mean, so the real issue that came up was the relation back. It didn't actually, the real issue as it came up didn't even go to notice pleadings. It was just relation back. So, I mean, to me, you know, to talk about what Justice Ziegler is bringing up about kind of like maybe the non-symmetrical consequences, that would be like going over plowed ground because it is such long-established law, and it's not an issue in here.
Special assessments, are they levied against all property or only taxable property?
They can be levied against all property, I believe, except the state.
Okay, so
it could be levied against the church. There was a case probably 40 years ago or so, I believe, the church on the square here was assessed for some improvements or whatever, and the court said that they could be assessed.
Well, let me ask this then. Suppose the special assessment were levied against a taxpayer who was in the next block or two blocks away. Somehow it wasn't in the area that really was properly assessed. Would that taxpayer have to appeal?
Yes. That taxpayer would have to be notified that he's being assessed. The process in an assessment is first the municipality does what's called a preliminary resolution, a notice of intent for the project and for the assessment. That is mailed to each property owner in the assessment area, in the potential assessment area. Some communities provide the engineer's report, which is referred to, that's what Justice Ziegler was mentioning in sub 5. Some wait until, and then the public hearing is held, and some communities wait until the public hearing to bring the engineer's report. Some mail it out before, but the engineer's report is then like the guts of the assessment. That tells you where your property is and how much it's going to be assessed. And also through the public hearing, you will hear the nature of the project, the cost, the reason, et cetera, and there'll be give and take.
Okay. There were two assessments on this property?
Correct.
Does that mean there were two mailings?
No, there would be one final resolution, but each street frontage would have been on a separate schedule, and then it would be that once you got the final resolution, you would look for your property on a schedule. It's kind of like looking at a report card, okay? You look at your class, then you look at your grade. If you got two classes, you look for two grades. If you're a property owner, you look at your property, and then you look at the assessment. And if you are a corner lot or you got two properties, you look for the two streets and the two amounts. The guts of the assessment are the schedule of assessments. That's the guts.
Does every owner of corner property know that they're going to be two different assessments?
You went to the public hearing, you would most certainly know that. I don't know if you would, in the final resolution, say that. Basically, what you would do is you would just look for your street frontage, and then you would look for your assessment. If you've got two
I'm just dying to know why it is that the original complaint filed by the gentleman sitting here only talks about one assessment.
I don't know either. I said it's beyond me. I think maybe he just found the first street, or the owner did, and, okay, that's my assessment. And it's really perplexing that it's the Murdoch Avenue one, because the street address of this Taco Bell is on Jackson Street. It's The street address is 1800 Jackson Street, and yet they didn't look for the Jackson Street schedule of assessment.
The schedule of assessment, I mean, the place where it references Murdoch is just this little writing in the lower right-hand corner. The place where it references Jackson is the lower right-hand corner of the other one. They have the exact same parcel ID number, exact same description, exact same owner, and the assessment for each is $19,000 and some odd. Do you think maybe they thought they were going to have to pay $19,000?
Well, one assessment is $19,241. The other assessment is $19,400 some odd change. But
I see the
schedule of assessments, including the map, as clearly indicating what the street frontage is.
But, I mean, I'm just curious if this is ever the protocol of the city. When you have something like this where you expect 19 plus 19 and you're sending two and they look virtually, I mean, they look very similar except for the jet in the...
Yeah, the maps are a little bit different, but the format is similar, and the format, that's all the assessments for all the street frontages will have a similar format. And maybe it was also a question.
My question is, did the city say, you know, realize it's 19 plus 19 totaling 30-something anywhere on anything, or just gave them these and said figure it out?
Not like, and there's not like any, like, caution property owners. If you are a corner lot, you're going to get assessments. That's not in there. But like I said, the guts are the schedule of assessments, and you look through the whole thing like you would if you had a report card. You look for all the stuff in terms of how it might affect you. There's nothing misleading, nothing confusing, nothing. It's straightforward. Those schedules are straightforward.
If you prevail here on $119,000, I gather that the city is going to do another assessment.
Hasn't been decided. They haven't decided that.
Well, if they did.
Could they? Yes.
And they sent out the assessment forms, and they included the previous assessment that you already won on.
Correct. That we've already dismissed, correct.
No, the one that we're talking about here. If you win here, and they did it again, but they have to appeal again?
Yes.
So that you, it wouldn't trouble you that, it wouldn't trouble the city of Oshkosh that they were collecting twice on something?
Oh, no, we can't. Maybe I misunderstood your question.
Well, suppose they didn't appeal. Suppose you assess them a second time.
The only reason we would assess them a second time is if the first one, for some reason, is held invalid.
No, but let's suppose you did send them an assessment and they didn't appeal. Could you assess them a second time because they didn't appeal it?
No, I think that would probably go to some constitutional. I don't know.
Raising constitutional questions.
Yeah, I know. That's a little. I'd have to ponder and think about that. I would say there is a thing also that accepts fraud, by the way, in 660703. And that to me would probably qualify as fraud. The limitation in paragraph A, which is the 90 days and whatnot, does not apply to appeals based on fraud or latent defects in the construction of the improvements. So I think those legislators are maybe a little more on top of stuff than we think they are. My time is up.
Well, I have a question that relates to Justice Prosser's. You want to collect $19,000 from CED, right?
Right.
Okay. And it relates to a special assessment on a particular street, right?
On which street?
Murdoch, is that the one we're talking about?
Jackson.
Or Jackson?
Jackson.
Or the one we're talking about now is Jackson.
Okay.
We have conceded that Murdoch is invalid.
All right. Is Jackson valid?
We don't believe the appeal's valid.
No, I understand that. But is...
Jackson valid? No. For the same reason Murdoch wouldn't be.
But I figured you'd have to say that.
Right.
So what Justice Prosser is asking you is, you have a special assessment that you've made, $19,000 on this property, and you're not going to be able to construct that special assessment because it's invalid. So now you got an extra $19,000 in the kitty. Does that go into your general funds? Does it go into a special assessment fund on Jackson or Murdoch, whichever one it is? And now you're going to pass a new special assessment for Jackson / Murdoch. You're going to collect $38,000 from CEG?
If we do both, if we do it over, mm-hmm. we will... do a special assessment for the CED property for $19,400 or whatever it is for Jackson, and we will do one for $19,241. Now, in the meantime, this thing was assessed in 2010. There is, as a condition of appealing, you must pay your special assessment as it's been required by the municipality,
right.
typically in over 6 years, up to 10 years, up to 10 years. They should be paying in. If we reassess it, the amount paid in will be credited. Plus, the statutes do not allow you to take any proceeds from a special assessment and put it in the general fund. The statutes tell you specifically and expressly that you must have a separate account.
That's what I thought. And the account would then be used for those special
Correct.
Assessments. And if they pay $19,000 and they they then do it right, they're going to get credit for the $19,000 that they paid because it's in a special fund for that.
Yes.
So the answer to Justice Prosser is they don't pay twice. I mean, that was my recollection of the statutes. Why I recollect that, I don't know, but we must have had a case sometime in the last 300 years that says that.
That thing about keeping in a separate fund has been around
Ever.
Since 1949
right.
as well.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Olson.
Thank you, Your Honor. First of all, in rebuttal to the question about whether it was proper to file the notice of appeal with the complaint attached to it, that was discussed at the trial court level, and it's on page 52 of our appendix, where Attorney Carlson states, the trial court asked him a question, and then Attorney Carlson states, it can be done either way. It can be done with a separate objection to the city clerk and then a complaint filed, or it can be done with a separate appeal that's attached to the complaint, as they have done. I take no issue with the way that they did the appeal. Second, there was a contention that notice pleading is a new invention, that we didn't bring that up back at the trial court level. Page 57 of our appendix, that was the argument that we made to the trial court. I said, well, first of all, two things. First of all, Wisconsin is a notice pleading state. I think it's difficult for the city to say that after looking at the plain text of this, which says that we're challenging the special assessment on Jackson Street and Murdoch, that it's difficult for them to plausibly say that they weren't on notice that we intended to challenge the whole thing. Second of all, there was some discussion about when we found out about this and what... And it was, as Attorney Carlson said, at the informal get-together we had to try to resolve the case when suddenly the city says, you guys got the wrong amount. And, let's take a look at this. We go back looking through it, and true enough, when you look through all those schedules that they served, you can see that there's two amounts there. And I don't know why we got it wrong at the beginning. I don't know if it was mistyped. I don't know if we looked up to a certain point, found the parcel number and the address and said, here it is, here we found it, or if we thought that it was a police, taxing power special assessment in which if it's a taxing power special assessment, then their report has to show both the tax that they're levying and it has to be less than the benefits that they claim that the property is going to obtain in some monetized form from the special assessment. And if you look at page 2 of their final resolution, which is in our supplemental appendix, it says at paragraph 4 that the benefits and damages shown on the report as modified are true and correct and are hereby confirmed. Possibly we looked and thought, oh, the larger one must be the benefits, however they figured them, and the smaller one must be the tax. I don't know at this point in time if that's what we did. It's lost in the shades of memory. That is one plausible reason we might have got it wrong. The other is that we just looked up to a certain point and got confused about it, and that's what we told the trial court. It is a mistake. Clearly, we would have liked to have either had no dollar amount in there or a dollar amount that would sufficiently challenge the entire amount. Now, it's interesting what Attorney Carlson said in response to, I believe, Chief Justice's question about would the second complaint have been adequate? And the answer was no. Too general. What could have been done differently? Well, there needed to be a better job of background facts, starting to sound like special pleading. You know, we're going to end up back at Charles Dickens' Bleak House if we're not careful here. And then what if we had said 38,000? What if we had added them upright? It was still not good enough because it's two special assessments. They would have had to, almost anything that I'm capable of writing, I truly believe that my opposing counsel, who's an extremely good lawyer, would have been capable of finding a defect with it on the level of scrutiny that it's asserted attaches to special assessment pleadings here. I think it's pretty clear that under Wisconsin's notice pleading applies because that's what the rules of procedure apply to special assessment appeals. And if notice pleading applies, it's got to be good enough if 1 in 3 appeals court judges read it the way that we're advocating that it reads, and if arguably, by the city's own answer, the city read it the way that we're advocating that it reads. And, gosh, there's sure a whole lot of things that the poor taxpayer ever has to do to ever get his day in court on one of these special assessments. First, 90 days from the date of the resolution to serve an appeal, a notice of appeal on the clerk, and presumably also to file a case in circuit court. It doesn't say anywhere in the resolution that there's a 90-day statute of limitations or what triggers that statute of limitations. That's pretty quick. Second, they have to pay a $150 bond into the clerk of courts. That's, you know, it's a requirement. It's certainly not it's in the statute, but it's not something everyone would know. And lastly, they have to pay their taxes during the entire time. So if they're paying their taxes, if everything is moving forward and they've done these other things, to add on top of it these sort of special rules of pleading and a strict construction of the complaint and the notice of appeal, however, it simply makes it nearly impossible to appeal. Thank you very much.
Counsel. I want to thank, on behalf of the court, Mr. Olson and Mr. Carlson for their arguments today on a special assessment, and aided and assisted us in their study of this case. That concludes our hearing on 12AP5, CED Properties, LLC, versus City of Oshkosh. The court is in recess for lunch, and we will come back at 1:30 to hear our third oral argument today.